People, it is good to be with you. I am on my own today. No John, no guest, no listener question, just me. And I've got a confession to make. I've been wanting to make this particular episode for weeks now, ever since we released that episode with Rich Slatcher. And I feel guilty about not doing it. I think I got so excited about doing it that I built it up in my mind and I thought I have to make it perfect. And it's not gonna be perfect today, but it's gonna be fresh. Cause I'm here and I'm excited. And the thing is that I've gotten so much great feedback from that Rich Slatcher interview. People saying, golly, I love that guy. The stuff he was talking about, in particular, the stuff he was talking about when he used the term high disclosure relationships. And basically, he was talking about the humanizing impact of high disclosure relationships. And honestly, if you're new to the show and this is the first episode you're listening to, I would say go back and listen to that one and then come back to this one, because I'm literally gonna piggyback on it as if it just ended. Because when Rich was done talking about all the wonderful things that happen to people, all the humanizing things that happen, and the sense of connection and belonging that happen, and appreciation that happen when people talk about themselves and listen to other people talk about themselves, I realized that, you know, we really ought to have a follow-up show in which we brought on an expert in getting people to talk about themselves. And at talking and also somebody who's really comfortable talking about themselves, you know, a high disclosure individual who is also good at getting other people to disclose. And John and I were kicking around ideas, and all of a sudden John goes, Bart, you are very good at getting people to talk to you. As a matter of fact, you have a podcast in which you interview people and they talk to you. And people think, like, gee, he's an easy person to talk to. And people end up telling you all sorts of things about themselves and their work and their lives. And I thought, yeah, that's true. I am pretty good at that. I mean, and I guess it's no wonder. I mean, I do it as an interviewer, but I also do it as a therapist. You know, like when somebody comes into my office, a new client, I don't know them. I don't know anything about them. And a big part of this thing is I've got to establish rapport. I've got to establish, like, I care about you. I'm interested in you. And I've got to get them to tell me what's up. I got to get them to tell me the problem. And sometimes people are reticent to do that. And so you have to develop some skills in getting people to talk to you, making them feel comfortable, making them feel safe. But the other interesting thing is, one of the things I've realized is that what works for me in life and what has worked for me in therapy is that the people that I'm interviewing or the people that I'm, you know, talking to and therapizing, even though the conversation is ostensibly all about them, a lot of times when it's over with, the guest says, gee, it was great getting to know you. Or a client will say, you will talk to me like, you know, well, you know, I know you would never be okay with this. And I'm thinking, wait a second. This person knows a lot about me. The person ends up getting to know me too, even though I'm the one asking all the questions. Because sometimes the way you ask questions and the way you respond to people lets them know a lot about who you are. You can disclose yourself without talking about yourself. You can disclose yourself by the way you talk about another person. And all of this is a lead up. You say, what are you leading up to? And that is this. When it comes to building high disclosure relationships, especially for people that are not, what's the word, vulnerable by nature, not prone to this kind of conversation, or just are shy or struggle, you know, to form connections. Sometimes we need tools. And, you know, people like, you know, ask good questions, make eye contact, be an active listener, all of which are great things to study. And we talk about them on the show all the time. And hopefully we model some of them. But the number one tool that I have used to connect with new people, to form connections with new people, or to deepen a hitherto casual relationship, to go deeper with somebody that I feel stuck with, the number one tool is something I actually learned or maybe just honed. I think I actually started doing it at USC, was when I was the humanist chaplain at USC for those 3 years that I was in LA, where this podcast got started. When I was the humanist chaplain at USC, I used this tool like must have been 150 times. Because what happened was when I was there, I would meet students. Like either we would be tabling, we'd have a table out, like, are you a humanist? Or, you know, something like that. Or we would be promoting an event. Like we're having a lecture on something beautiful. And people would come by and they would talk with me and some of our students. And I'd meet people. Or I would be at an event and I would say, oh yeah, I'm the humanist chaplain. I would be talking with some kid. And I would say, hey, would you want to grab a cup of coffee with me sometime? And strangely, almost all of the young people would say yes. And I at first I thought it was my charming personality, but then I talked to all the other chaplains on campus and they said every time they asked somebody out to coffee, they said yes too. It turns out that on a campus like USC, the professors are very busy. You got a lot of young people that are sort of going through anxious times and everything. And so when a caring adult says, hey, I'd like to spend a little time getting to know you, people almost always say yes. So then I would meet somebody for a cup of coffee. And all of those times I had some version of the same conversation. And yet each one of those conversations was incredibly different and created a very different kind of connection, because what all of those conversations were about were me sort of basically saying, will you tell me your story? I just want to hear your story. And what I want to do in this episode is I want to kind of give you the nuts and bolts of a tell me your story conversation, because especially for people who aren't natural raconteurs, you know, conversationalists, having a structure, like having an agenda. And I would always show up at these lunch dates or these coffee dates with the same agenda. I'm like, I don't know this kid and I want to connect with him, but I also want this young person to get a sense of what my values are and where I'm coming from, because I represented kind of the humanist chaplaincy. And the idea was like, if they feel like, okay, these values, this guy is promoting a set of values and he's kind of leading a group of people that share a set of values that I'm into, they might be prone to kind of check it out. So the agenda was always, I want to really get to know this student, but I also want them to get a sense of me. And this is the way I did it. It was always in this tell me your story conversation. And you'll figure out how it might apply in your life. But I would basically sit down and we'd be chatting for a while and I'd go like, hey, you know, like, I know you are a student here at USC, or I know you're a friend of Katie's, you know, like, or I know that you're on the robotics team or whatever it is I did know. I say, I know that, but I don't know your story. And so like, would you mind just kind of telling me how you got here? Like, and then I would always sort of jokingly say, you know, go all the way back. Like, you know, start the story with like, I was born. Like, where were you born? And I would always just start the, like, where were you born? And it's not a scary question. Where were you born? The person would say like, yeah, I was born in Fresno, or I was born in Pakistan, or I was born wherever they were from. Like, I was born, I go like, okay, really? So you were born, you know, or they would say, I was born here in LA, you know, wherever they were born. And they would say, I was born here. And I would say, okay. And so you were born, that's where you're born. Who are you born to? Like, who had you? And they would say like, my mother and my father. It's like, yeah, well, what were their names? And they'd say like, you know, Dick and Marianne. And a lot of times what I would do is I would pull out a piece of paper and I'd say, okay, like, the way I listen is by taking notes. Do you mind if I write that down? I write down Dick, Marianne. And As soon as I would do that, the student would go like, geez, this guy's really interested. You know, he wants to know. And I wouldn't always pull out the notes, but when it felt right, I would pull out a notebook and I would just go, Dick, Marianne, Fresno. And I'd say, so what were Dick and Marianne doing in Fresno? So, and this was like my standard opening. Like these questions didn't vary the first few. I'd be like, what were Dick and Marianne doing in Fresno? So, you know, Dick was, you know, my dad was a truck driver. You know, my mother was a school teacher or whatever they would say. And I'd be like, really? Like, so, you know, were they from Fresno? And I would sort of try to place these kids' parents. And sometimes you'd be like, yeah, it was my mom. My dad was never in the picture. Or, you know, whatever they said, I would be like, okay. And I said, and when they brought you home, like, who else was in the home? Was it just Dick and Marianne and you? And they would go, no, I had an older brother. How many years older? Like, oh, 5 years older, 2 years older, 1 year older. And so then he was there. Like, was that it? Were you the last one? And they would go, no, I have like six older brothers or six younger brothers rather. And I would, the whole point is like at the beginning, I was just trying to get the layout of the house. And what were these people doing for a living? And were they from that place or had they just moved there? Like, how did they get there? And a lot of times that's it's a safe start. People don't mind telling you that stuff. It's not, these are not intrusive questions necessarily. And so I'm finding out like, oh, who are the siblings and all this other stuff. And I'm writing down the names of siblings and stuff like that. I'm just curious. And then I would say, okay, so you're growing up there. And I said, as you're growing up, like at some point you came to awareness, right? You're a baby, but at some point you come to awareness. Like I've got a 5-year-old granddaughter and like, she's aware. Like if you said to her, you know, what kind, you know, do your mom and dad like each other? Do you like your little brother? Like, is there enough food in your refrigerator? If you asked her, like, she would know, like, you basically you sort of say, like, hey, is your home a happy home? And she would go, like, yeah, it is. Well, yeah, my parents like me. They like each other. I have a little brother. I like him. You know, my grandparents live around the corner. She would know. And, like, if a kid was growing up in poverty, they would go, like, you know, if she was in poverty right now, she would go like, yeah, you know what? Actually, we moved around a lot when I was 5. Or when I became aware, like when my parents were fighting all the time, there was a lot of screaming. Or, you know, there was a guy in the house and he was scary. So you sort of say, when you came to awareness, like, what was your house like? Like, what did it feel like to you? And that's a disarming question. People go like, huh, you know. Yeah, I guess I would say it was happy. Or sometimes a person like, no, my parents did not like each other. Or like my dad was gone by the time, or my mom was gone, or somebody died, or we lived with my grandmother and she was not a happy person, or she was a happy person. But you want to get, so the beginning is like, where were you born? Tell me about the household. And when you came to awareness in that household, how did it feel to you? And that is a really good place to begin with somebody's story. And it doesn't take that long. And they tell you all that stuff. And then I would say like, okay, so then like you went to school, right? And usually they'll say, yes. Sometimes they'll say, no, we homeschooled or there was some other arrangement. But a lot of times, yeah, I went to school. So like, what was that like for you? Like, where'd you go? Like when you went to school, like, did you like it? And it gives a person a chance to reflect on like when the kid first goes to school, a lot of times kids are like, I hated it because I couldn't keep up or because I was overweight or because this or that. Or sometimes kids are like, yeah, I really liked it. Like I when I was at my house, I was an only child and there were no kids and all of a sudden there were friends. So I said, did you like it? Like, what did you like? How did it work for you? Like, how were the academics? Sometimes I say, I was really into it. Sometimes I say, I struggled like crazy. So, but did you have friends? And they would say, oh yeah. Like, you know, like what were you into as a kid? And so all of a sudden this person's sort of describing like, usually people either really hated school or they really liked school, or there was something about school that they liked or something about school that they hated. And it's a great place to get, again, like, this is not dangerous stuff, but it's interesting. And I think that the main thing that you want to do at this point, when you're asking these kinds of questions to somebody, when you're getting their story, is you want to be looking for, is there anything there that kind of gives me an angle on something that might be a shaping influence? Like if their grandparents lived in the house, or if they go like, no, the school was, I mean, we lived out on an island and there were only 10 other kids at the school. Like you're just looking for what's going on at school. And usually I'm trying to get a sense of this person's life as a kid. And sometimes that's where the poverty comes in, or difficult relationships. Sometimes I'll even just say, like, so as you're growing up, like, did anything big happen? Like, were there any car accidents? Did anybody's house burn down? Like, you know, and I'm looking for, like, what were the shaping experiences of a person's childhood? And sometimes, you know, depending on the context, I'll say, like, so, like, your family, like, were they, was there enough money? Were they church, were your folks church people? Or like, were there any kind of religious influence going on? And I'm just trying to get a, and you say, like, well, how do you know what questions to ask? And this is the key, is you got to be curious. You're like, what do you want to know about somebody's childhood that helps you get a sense of what it was like to be them as a kid? And so for me, like, I ask all those things. I ask about money. I ask about school. I ask about church. I ask about what was going on in your family. And you might think, like, oh, you can do this when you're a therapist, but you can't do this when you're just a person. I'm like, when I was at USC, I was just a person. I was just interested. And sometimes people are like, they would give very, what's the word, superficial answers to these questions. And that's fine. You're still learning something. You're learning this person's not, they don't want, you know, maybe this story goes along a lot faster because they don't want to talk about this stuff. It'll still be useful to you to know where they're from and how many siblings they've got. Like, that stuff can be interesting. But a lot of times, you know, you sort of say, like, hey, so you had like 5 brothers? Like, were you guys close? Did you hang out? Like, did your older brothers like you? Did you like your younger brothers? And people will just tell you, like, yeah, my brother and I, we did not get along. Or, yeah, I thought he was the greatest, you know, and we did this and that and the other. And so a lot of times I'll say, like, okay, so you're growing up there. And I said, you know, and like, I'll try to figure out, like, did anything big happen before you hit like junior high and high school? And I'll go, no. And I'm like, okay, so then now tell me about junior high and high school. Cause like for a lot of people, high school, either, you know, you've seen all the movies, like, some people love high school. Most people suffer through high school, even if it seems like they're loving high school, but like, people have strong impressions of their high school life and sometimes of junior high as well. And so I'm always like, so when you got there, like, when, you know, you're kind of getting older and you're into the whole high school thing, and people go like, oh, high school, everything changed. Or high school was great. Or high school, yeah. But like, I'm really interested in, like, what was high school like for you? And that's just a great question. What was high school like for you? What were you into? Were you a sports person? Were you like into the academics? Were you, you know, out back smoking with everybody else? Were you into drama, band, music? What were you into? Video games, whatever it is. And like, I'm just trying to go, like, who did you have friends? Like, who were your friends when you were in high school? Did you have like a best friend? And I'm just trying to get a picture of, like, if this was a movie, like, where, what role would this kid be playing in the high school movie? And people kind of like to talk about that stuff. Strangely enough, you'd be surprised. Even if they didn't like high school, they like to tell you they didn't like high school. And I'll always sort of say, like, so you have friends, like, did you date anybody? Like, and you know, sometimes people are like, oh no, I did not come close to dating anybody. Or like, oh yeah, I dated a lot. Or like, and I'm interested, like, tell me about that. Like, anything serious? You know, and you're like, a perfect stranger is not going to tell you who they dated in high school. And I'm going to beg to differ. They're actually more likely to talk to you about that than they would be somebody that they were on a date with. Because like, you're just interested in them. There's a lot of times the stakes are not super high in that situation. Now, this is a place where one of the skills is like reading the body language. If somebody seems uncomfortable with these questions, if you feel like these questions are intrusive, if they're acting like these questions are intrusive, back off. But in my experience, most people do not err in these kind of get to know you conversations by being too intrusive. They err by not being interested enough, by not probing, and by not actually asking questions. Now, the thing I want to emphasize here is that at some point, something's going to come up. Somebody's going to say, like, yeah, our house did burn down, or my parents divorced, or the big thing that happened when I was in high school was I got a terrible eating disorder, and I was in the hospital. And people will tell you, like, something happened. Or my dad won the lottery and all of a sudden we had $10 million and everything. What's my response when somebody tells me that? I just go like, wow, what was that like? How did that change things? You know, like when somebody tells you something, you can't just go like, well, my next question is, did you play sports? You know, somebody tells you, my house burned down. And you go like, oh, and did you have friends? Like, you have to be, the thing about this is it's not just about asking the questions. You have to listen. And that's why over time I got to the point where I used the same questions all the time, because I didn't want to think about the questions very much. I wanted to listen to the answers. Because the real getting to know somebody and them getting to know you is when they tell you their house burns down and you go like, wow. That must have been awful. What was that like? And they go like, oh, you want to know more? Yeah, geez, did that change everything? Like, what did you do then? Like, who helped you? What happened? And so the reason you're asking for the story is you're looking for things that you can, that are interesting, that a curious person would want to know more about. And you're demonstrating, when you say something, I hear it and I follow up on it. A lot of times, you know, a lot happens in high school. But one of the things that happens in high school is usually towards the end of high school. I was like, so as you're coming like up on senior year, did you know what you were going to do next? And some people go, oh yeah, I knew I was going to go to college. And you're like, how did you pick your college? Or I didn't, you know, like, yeah, I went to work. And, or I took a gap year or whatever it is. You're just like, so what'd you do after you graduated? And let's just imagine the person says, yeah, I went to college. And I'm like, where'd you go? Why? Why'd you choose that place? Oh, it was close to home and I had a girlfriend, or, you know, oh, this and that. And then one of the things is I'm sort of like, so what'd you study? How was it? You know, did you like, was college different than high school? And one of the things I always ask people about college is like, did you change? Did anything change for you? Because a lot of times people make decisions, they find things out that, you know, that are different. You know, people get converted to a religion. They get deconverted from religion. They get their first serious relationship. What, you know, they make friends that are still their friends to this day. And so I'm always really interested in like, what happened to you in college? Not just like, where did you go, but like, what happened when you got there? And of course, at any point, if somebody brings up, I had this significant relationship, I'm always kind of like, was it good? Was it a good relationship? Like, how'd that work out? Like, did that make a difference? You know, I'm kind of like, tell me about that relationship if they want to. And so sometimes somebody's like, oh, it was a really toxic relationship, but it lasted for 4 years. What kept you there? What was she like? What was he like? you know, somebody says to me like, yeah, I played 7 years of badminton, you know, and I was like, were you good at it? Like, what did you like about badminton? Like, that, you know, how did you even get into that? And so like all the way through a person's stories, they're throwing you things where they tell you like, I was interested in this, or I did this, or I was engaged with that. And you, and those are all opportunities for you to show interest. But also they may tell you something like, yeah, I dated a guy for 4 years. And towards the end, like he was really manipulative and he lied to me and he cheated on me with my best friend. And that's where you get to tell a little bit about who you are. That's where they get to know you, because you go like, oh man, that makes me so angry. I mean, whenever, I knew, you know, my mom got cheated on, or, you know, I got cheated on, or a friend of mine got cheated on, like, and that's where you pull your experience in, not to take the story away from them, but to signal like, that touches me. Or when somebody tells you about something, you know, like there was the, like my soccer team went to States, and you go like, wow, I have always, like, I would have loved that, you know, I always wanted to be on a team that was like, that my team's always lost. And so in a sense, you're sort of, you're not putting yourself in their story and you're not trying to like top their story. You're just trying to say like, oh yeah, I know what you're talking about. Or, ooh, that would scare the heck out of me. Or, man, I must've been hard. Or golly, I have no idea what that experience would be like. My experience was so different. And sometimes I'll say, well, what was your experience? And you're like, well, you know, like, I mean, I grew up in the most, like, you know, like I grew up in a super stable home and it was just so different. I didn't have to go through any of that stuff. But like, I'm glad to tell you about it sometime, but like, what did you do next? And so in a sense, like I'm willing to tell you about myself and I'll signal to you, like you want, like I'll tell you my story sometime if you want to hear it, but like really, like you got me in the middle of the movie here. Like bring, I need to know what happened. And that's a great line, by the way. I need to know what happened. It signals that you're not in this to make the other person feel good, that you are genuinely invested in the story. Yeah. So one other thing is that sometimes somebody will say like, oh yeah, I guess I realized that, I really couldn't trust this person. And they'll use a big word like trust, or they'll say, I felt really betrayed. And a lot of times when somebody uses a word that's loaded like that, I'll go like, betrayed, what do you mean by that? Or somebody will say like, I don't know, it was a really spiritual experience. And you go like, so like, what do you mean by spiritual? Or any word that can like have like, or I really felt like my brother, he really loved me. And I go like, when you say love, like what is love, like in that setting, what did love look like? Because a lot of times what I want to make sure is like sometimes somebody will say something to you and you'll go, yeah, yeah. And sometimes we're even tempted to say something like, oh, I totally know what you're talking. Yeah, oh, I totally understand. Or that makes perfect sense to me. And you don't understand. And so one of the ways that you signal that you're not jumping ahead or making assumptions is you ask people to define words or to explain. Like they go like, yeah, I was like in drama. And I was like, well, like how big was the drama company at your school? Or when you say you were in drama, like, does that mean like you actually acted in the plays? Or like, were you in the stage crew? Like you don't want to take things at face value. You want to ask some follow-up questions. Maybe I'm getting too technical here. I wish I was doing the show with John, because John would say, hey, move it along. Or he would roll his eyes at me and say, hey, okay, we're enough. One of the best questions I ask that I think it's one I learned about halfway through my time at USC, and it turned out to be the crucial one is when somebody tells me about a hard thing that they went through, or if just high school itself was hard, or junior high was hard, or their first job was hard, whenever they get to the hard stuff, one of the best questions you can ask is, when that was happening, was anyone there for you? Was there a coach? Was there a teacher? Was there a youth pastor? Was there an aunt? You know, like, did you have anybody to talk to? Like, who did anybody help you in that situation? Because if nobody helped them, that's a really good time for you to go like, oh, man, I'm sorry about that. Like that, and they go, hey, it's not your fault. And I go, I know, but like, I mean, as I hear you talking, I just think like, it would have been great if some teacher had shown up. It would have been great if somebody would have asked you what was going on. You know, it would have been great if. But sometimes somebody's like, oh, yeah, ooh, my drama teacher, Mrs. Johnson, she was amazing. And you go like, what'd she do? Because sometimes people, they will tell you the negatives in their life, but they have to be prompted to brag on the positives. They have to be prompted to tell you the good things. And sometimes you can help somebody tap into their own gratitude by just asking, like, who was there? Did anyone help? And sometimes it's very exciting when they're able to tell you who was there for them and they get to brag on somebody. There are lots of follow-up questions. Like when somebody talks about a job, like what did you actually, like, they were like, I worked at, you know, TQL. And you're like, what do you do there? You know, then I got this job. And you're like, what do you do at your job? Again, think of them as a character in a movie and you're trying to fill out the character so you, like, you know what they do. In a movie, they would show you the guy on the assembly line, but if a person tells you they work at a factory, you don't know what they do. So you're like, so what do you do in that factory? And they're like, oh, I actually sweep up. Or I'm actually in personnel. But what does that mean, personnel? Oh, it means that I interview people for jobs or whatever it means. But again, like, I can't tell you how many people I know whose own kids or even their spouse or their best friends don't know much about what they do. And so you're going to establish yourself as a person that a person feels more connected to if they feel like you can picture them at work. Like, I'm always like, so where do you stand? Like, so how many people are in that office? Like, I've got a movie in my mind that I'm trying to make of this person's life, and I need more information to set it up. And when you ask those questions, it really makes somebody feel like the star of that movie. And that's a good feeling. Somebody tells me something bad happened. I'm like, were you scared? Did you tell anyone? What was that relationship like? What did you learn? That's a great question. In any of these situations, when somebody tells you about something, did you bring anything good out of that? Like, did you learn anything in that situation? And again, sometimes when, as people reflect, they tell you what they learned and they go like, you know, I've never really thought about it before, but I guess I learned this. And you say, well, of course they would have figured that out the last time they told the story. And this is the big secret. Almost everybody that I've gotten to tell me their story, at the end of it, when they like bring me up to it, so that's how you got here, right? So, thank you, I'll say. And they'll almost always say to me, you know, I've never told my whole story to anybody. I've never told my whole story to anybody. And that's the magical thing, is that it is a huge gift to somebody to sit and listen to their story. And I always found myself fascinated, but of course, I'm curious. But here's the weird thing. I don't think I'm curious by nature. I think it's the act of asking all these questions and listening to so many stories that now I've become kind of a connoisseur of stories. So I'm listening to stories. I'm sort of connecting sometimes in my mind. Oh, I know somebody who went through something like that, or, you know, oh, she, you know, she, this reminds me of something else. I don't say those things out loud, but I'm genuinely curious now, because the more you get to know people, the more you want to get to know people. You know, when people tell me their stories now, they always get to 2020, and I'm like, and then COVID hit, right? And they're like, oh my gosh, yeah. And I'm like, how did you get through that? Where were you during COVID? What was that like for you? And people, you know, we all went through it, and you would think that like it would be something that we would talk about, but it's not something people talk about unless somebody asks. Religion's the same way. You know, like I always ask people, like, kind of, was there any religion? And not because I'm trying to convert them or deconvert them or the conversation. I'm just like, that's a factor in somebody's life growing up. Like, did you have any spiritual influence? Like, was anybody trying to, did you buy into anything? Were you part of some youth group? And like, relationships are a theme. Like, who are the relationships? Trauma is a theme. Like, where were the big hits? Religion is a theme. And a lot, and again, COVID is a reliable theme. It shows up in 2020 in every story you'll ever hear. If you're still with me, if you're still listening to this podcast right now, you're probably one of the people that's actually thinking, I might do this sometime. Like, would this really work? And so here's the thing. What John and I are going to do is, we're going to track down somebody that I don't know. Somebody maybe who's listened to the podcast once, or somebody, you know, we're just going to get somebody in, and we're going to talk to them in this way. And you say, but there are lots of like deconversion podcasts, and there are, like, I just guested on this show, The Harmonic Atheist, and I had no idea this show was so big, but this guy, he's only been deconverted for 4 years, but he's been interviewing person after person, and they just tell their deconversion stories. Wonderful person. Name's Tim. But those conversations, those are interviews. And there's one part of a person's life that he wants to get down into. Mine are not interviews. Mine are conversations. And I got nowhere I'm trying to go. I just want to hear the story. And so what I'm going to do is, I'm going to get somebody on the show, and I'm just going to get to know them just for the sake of doing it. And just to demonstrate how a conversation like this works. It's not, there's going to be no agenda. I'm just going to want to find out. It's going to be like, you're going to be overhearing a coffee date that I might've had at USC, or a first meeting that I might have with somebody in my office, or, you know, an airplane ride I might have from LA when I'm bored. And what I'm hoping is that now that I've told you what I'm doing, and then you'll hear me do it, and Rich Slatcher has already explained to you why it's so valuable, that maybe a handful of people in the Humanize Me audience will try this stuff out. And it won't work perfectly. I have a lot of practice by now. But the only way it ever gets to the place where it really works smoothly for you is if you practice. And the good news is that you won't crash and burn on this. You just, like, it'll still be fine. If you just ask a person to tell you their story, and they give you the basics, and you find out where they grew up and where they went to high school and where they went to college and, you know, how they met their wife and how they got that job. And if that's all you know, and you're done in 10 minutes, you're still going to know more than almost anybody else that has coffee with them. But I'm telling you, it's going to be more than that. And the more you do it, the more smooth you're going to get at it. And the more you're going to be able to listen, because you're not really thinking about what you have to say, because you'll know what you have to say. You'll know what questions you want to ask. And then something really magical happens. And that's coming from a guy who does not believe in magic. Is that you will find that people, you go like, well, people are going to feel so uncomfortable with me if all I want to do is ask them questions. And what I find is that people get comfortable really fast when they figure out that you really, really want to know. And sometimes somebody will turn around and say, like, hey, will you tell me your story? And I go like, yeah, you buy coffee next time. I'm totally down with it. And I am. Because what's funny is that I've told my story a million times. But every time I tell it, it comes out a little bit different. Not because I'm telling it different, but because the person asks different follow-up questions. They're interested in different parts of my story. And high disclosure, Rich Slatcher is not lying to you. High disclosure is the way to have a sense of belonging. And eliciting it from others and offering it in return, it's a beautiful thing. And I'm glad I got to talk about it with you. And honestly, if you're still awake by now, I apologize for rambling on. There was nobody to stop me. But there will be next time. As you know, if you are a fan of this podcast. And of course, unless if you're not a fan of this podcast, you didn't make it this far anyway. So to you faithful few that are still with me, thanks. I hope it's helpful. And I look forward to sharing more, to showing you how it works in action the next time we get together on Humanize Me.
This podcast is made possible by supporters of the show on Patreon. Get an exclusive extra episode every month for less than the cost of a cup of coffee at patreon.com/humanizeme. You'll also get a video newsletter from Bart and some extra goodies. Our patrons make this show happen, so please, if you enjoy it, consider joining us. That's patreon.com/humanizeme. Bart's website, where you can contact him, is bartcampolo.org. And this episode is produced by Katie Johnson-Smith, me, John Wright, and Bart Campolo.
Hey, you could be larger than life.